role reversal. Could a weakened fight or flight response be causing ME/CFS and long COVID? The 2025 IACFS ME Conference Part 1 by Court Johnson, November 11th, 2025. Plenary speakers provide critical information that the conference organizers believe everyone needs to hear. This presentation certainly fit the bill. The Catacaholic. David Goldstein, MD, PhD, is not your ordinary researcher. An NIH, National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, researcher, the winner of several awards, and co-author of more than 600 research articles as well as several books, such as Adrenaline and the Inner World, An Introduction to Scientific Integrative Medicine, and Dysautonomias, A Handbook for Patients. Also, Stress, Catecholamines, and Cardiovascular Disease, and The Autonomic Nervous System in Health and Disease. Finally, he wrote a book called Principles of Autonomic Medicine. The man has clearly gotten around. Officially retired from the NIH, he's listed as a scientist emeritus. He's still actively involved in research and working in a non-salary or limited salary capacity. Clearly a highly productive individual, Goldstein is spending his retirement years doing what he's always done, research. Now he and his postdoc, Lillian Aregawi, are working on ME/CFS. Acknowledging that he's not an expert in ME/CFS, Goldstein stated he is an expert in catecholamines, the hormones and neurotransmitters the brain produces, and called himself a catecholaholic. He's been studying catecholamine systems for 50 years. It's good to have outside experts who are drenched in the minutiae of their fields, but not in these diseases. Bring their attention to diseases like ME/CFS and long COVID. For one, the fact that these diseases have caught their eye says something. For another, they should bring objective, well-seasoned analysis of complex subjects to the field. Produced by the brain, the nerves, and the adrenal glands, catecholamines like dopamine, epinephrine, and norepinephrine are particularly intriguing in ME/CFS and long COVID because they are involved in the stress or fight-flight response, the autonomic nervous system, movement, mood, pleasure, reward, memory, and more. Simple study, potentially profound results. Aregawi's study has not yet been published. She did a surprisingly simple but potentially profound thing that hasn't been done in ME/CFS before. She assessed the activity of the dopamine, norepinephrine, and epinephrine pathways in the brain by measuring the levels of their products in cerebral spinal fluid. Aregawi used Parkinson's patients as a positive control, i.e., because low dopamine and norepinephrine levels are present in Parkinson's disease, the Parkinson's patients demonstrated what low levels of these catecholamines looked like. Role reversal. For all the talk of dopamine in ME/CFS, the dopamine pathway levels were fine. The low levels of the products of the norepinephrine pathway suggested that norepinephrine was in free fall in ME/CFS. The norepinephrine pathway is not as low in long COVID, but was still significantly reduced. That was a bit of a shock. Norepinephrine is the main neurotransmitter of the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight system we've believed is overactivated. What's needed is to calm it down by increasing the function of its regulator, the parasympathetic nervous system or rest and digest system. In other words, a wimpy PNS or parasympathetic nervous system is simply failing to regulate the sympathetic nervous system. This scenario, though, has been punctured a bit by the success of several drugs, Mestinon and Cervovexant, that increase norepinephrine activity. If this study findings hold up, it blows the overactive, underactive, sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic nervous system scenario to smithereens. A weak parasympathetic nervous system is not the problem. A weak sympathetic nervous system is. Interestingly, it all comes down to ATP. Catecholamine metabolism proceeds like this. Tyrosine to L-DOPA to dopamine to norepinephrine to epinephrine. The only part of this chain that requires ATP is the conversion of dopamine to norepinephrine. Because norepinephrine is metabolized in vesicles of the locus coeruleus, a proton pump is needed to move dopamine into those vesicles. It takes about one ATP molecule to transport one molecule of dopamine into the vesicles. The low norepinephrine pathways in ME/CFS and COVID suggest that reduced ATP levels were failing to deliver sufficient dopamine into vesicles to produce normal amounts of norepinephrine. Locus coeruleus neurons with poorly filled vesicles can still fire, but require a much stronger signal to do so, i.e., they demonstrate what's called impaired drive. This is the exact opposite of what happens in a true adrenergic hyperactivity disorder, which is characterized by an overproductive sympathetic nervous system. Instead, this is called a presynaptic vesicle energy problem. The sympathetic nervous system is activated, all right, but it's also quickly pooping out, a common theme in these diseases. The brain is trying very hard to produce more norepinephrine, high LC firing rate, but is failing because the vesicles are too low in dopamine. And that constant compensatory effort results in high levels of sympathetic noise, but low levels of sympathetic gain. In this scenario, the sympathetic nervous system is not dominating, it's struggling. Recognizing that sympathetic nervous system is trying to get things going, the parasympathetic nervous system is not broken, it's lying low. This may be why trying to increase parasympathetic vagal tone through breath work, heart rate variability training, or vagus stimulation often only goes so far. Both the PNS, or parasympathetic nervous system, and the SNS, sympathetic nervous system, need to be revived. That means you don't want to suppress the sympathetic nervous system or increase norepinephrine synthesis using tyrosine or stimulants. Instead, you want to reduce the noise, increase ATP levels, get dopamine into the vesicles, and increase norepinephrine production that way. When sympathetic nervous system begins to respond normally, parasympathetic nervous system activity naturally returns to a normal level. Symptoms. This pattern of the high LC neuron firing but low production could produce classic ME/CFS long COVID symptoms that leave one overstimulated, overwhelmed, and anxious and tense, but without the energy to do anything. It would naturally result in the ubiquitous wired but tired symptoms, high levels of stimulation, but no response because of low norepinephrine vesicle levels, orthostatic intolerance, reduced blood vessel tone, early mental or physical fatigue, norepinephrine levels in the vesicles quickly fade and fail to refill. Feeling stuck, unrefreshed, etc. in the morning due to poor vesicle filling overnight is another logical outcome. Exposure to light, getting up, and resuming a normal breathing pattern should immediately tell the locus coeruleus to boost norepinephrine levels in the vesicles and get the body and brain moving in the morning. That includes having our system driving blood to the tissues to get them rolling. Having low norepinephrine vesicle levels in the morning puts the brakes on all that. Low norepinephrine vesicle levels could also explain why stimulants either do not work or do not work for long in some patients. Stimulants increase firing in the locus coeruleus, but do not help to refill the vesicles, i.e. the gas pedal is pushed, but the car does not move. A focus on post-exertional malaise. Aragawi did an interesting thing in this study when she separated out long COVID patients with and without post-exertional malaise, or as we lovingly know it, PEM, and found that the low norepinephrine levels were confined to the long COVID patients with PEM. That made sense with the pathophysiology she uncovered. Norepinephrine levels in the long COVID vesicles are quickly depleted with exertion, resulting in a longer recovery period. During that time, sympathetic noise, sensitivity to stimuli, sleep issues, and the ability to exert oneself, low norepinephrine vesicle levels, is down. That should bring a clear warning to long COVID researchers to subset their participants by the existence of PEM. It's also a reminder that 5 years into long COVID, we still don't have a biological biomarker or even agreed upon criteria to separate out the ME/CFS subsets of long COVID from the rest. Why it's taken this long for the field to recognize that all long COVID patients are not alike and that willy-nilly herding them into research studies and clinical trials is a recipe for slow progress is beyond me. Distinguishing the subsets should, in my opinion, have been the first task of this field, and of course, we looked to RECOVER to take the lead in this, which it hasn't. Rant over. That finding suggested that the norepinephrine levels in the ME/CFS subset of long COVID patients were probably as low as the norepinephrine levels in the ME/CFS patients. Next, Aragawi assessed a large number of neurobehavioral measures to determine whether she could identify significant correlations with the pathway findings. She found that fatigue, general fatigue, mental fatigue, general health, and vitality, ability to sustain hand grip, were correlated with low norepinephrine pathway levels. A post-infectious failure point. Most of the norepinephrine produced in the brain is produced in the locus coeruleus, or LC, found near the bottom of the brain. The LC is located in a part of the brainstem called the pons. Heavily involved in the stress response, the LC is connected to many parts of the brain, including the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex, and plays a role in many issues in post-infectious diseases such as arousal, the sleep-wake cycle, attention, memory, and neuroplasticity. The brain's immune sentinel, the LC, or locus coeruleus, is hit early and hard during an infection. Because the brain needs a lot of norepinephrine to produce a fever, activate the immune cells, and in general to produce sickness behavior, the LC gets pushed into overdrive. All that activity means the LC are loaded with mitochondria, which need to fire continuously. Their high energy needs and the high stress state they're put in leave the LC neurons in a metabolically fragile state. Basically, everything has to go right. If strong antioxidant systems can't cope with the free radicals produced during high levels of energy production, mitochondrial damage results and ATP production drops, and so does dopamine into the vesicles where norepinephrine is made. Studies indicate that the antioxidant systems in these diseases have been hit hard, resulting, if these study findings are correct, in a chronically activated and depleted locus coeruleus. Reduced norepinephrine causes the brain to chronically activate these neurons in an attempt to get them back up to speed. The chronic activation prevents the glymphatic system from engaging and clearing the brain of the bad stuff, lactate, glutamate byproducts, lipid peroxides, microglial inflammatory signals it's been accumulating in its hyperactivated and depleted state. If autoantibodies to various receptors, A1 and B2 adrenergic receptors, M3, M4 cholinergic receptors, NMDA, AMPA synaptic receptors, block those receptors, as is thought in ME/CFS, the LC corresponds by increasing its firing, thus exacerbating the problem. Plenty of study evidence implicates the LC in ME/CFS. MRI and diffusion tensor studies suggest that neuroinflammation, microglial activation, has occurred in the locus coeruleus, that signals emanating from the LC are noisy and not clear, and that brain circuits leading to the LC have become hyperactivated in ME/CFS. Reduced pupil constriction and delayed recovery during pupillometry also suggest that the LC signal is weak and noisy. The flattened sleep architecture, reduced slow wave sleep, and increased nighttime sympathetic nervous system activation fit perfectly the idea that chronic LC activation is preventing the glymphatic system from opening and flushing the brain of toxins. Because the LC regulates blood pressure and heart rate upon standing, a chronically activated LC could result in increased heart rate during standing, reduced vascular tone, and sympathetic overdrive. A vicious circle. Microglial activation is all that's needed to produce a state of chronic self-reinforcing illness. The microglia are the immune cells of the brain. The cytokines activated microglia emit all increase locus coeruleus firing. The reactive oxygen and nitrogen species, or free radicals, that activated microglia produce can take a hammer to the mitochondria, reducing ATP production and preventing the vesicles from filling with enough norepinephrine. Those free radicals can also disrupt glymphatic detoxification by impairing astrocyte functioning. The high levels of the excitatory amino acid glutamate produced create a hyper-excited state that results in sensory overload. Rest does not cure ME/CFS because the activated microglia do not rest. Because two mast cell products, histamine and tryptase, increase LC firing and disrupt the blood-brain barrier respectively, they only add to the stuckness. That's a lot. But we're not at all done with the possible consequences of a norepinephrine filling problem in the locus coeruleus. It could also produce toxic brains. Toxic brains. Noting that norepinephrine produced by the locus coeruleus controls cerebrospinal fluid flows, Dr. Parent asked whether the norepinephrine problem could lead to a dysfunctional glymphatic system. He proposed this problem could be at the heart of many neurological disorders. It turns out that norepinephrine determines whether the glymphatic system is an open cleaning versus closed not cleaning state. A drop in locus coeruleus norepinephrine release at night allows the glymphatic system to shift into cleaning mode. A chronically activated locus coeruleus, though, prevents the glymphatic system from engaging, leaving the ME/CFS long COVID patients not just wired and tired, but with a toxin-laden brain. The failure of that nightly neural housekeeping results in the accumulation of nasty metabolic byproducts, such as lactate, glutamate, and lipid fragments. Unrefreshing sleep, neuroinflammation, worse brain fog in the morning, feelings of pressure, fullness in the head, and sensory overload are logical outcomes. Intracranial hypertension. Given the poor brain cleansing and toxic buildup, it only makes sense that intracranial hypertension, high cerebral spinal fluid pressure, could result. As waste products accumulate, the brain retains more fluid. If the astrocytes don't relax, the cerebral spinal fluid won't get flushed out of the brain. Too much cerebral spinal fluid retention will increase cerebral spinal fluid pressure. Possible symptoms include feelings of head pressure and fullness, feeling worse when lying down, feeling better after sleeping with your head slightly elevated, brain fog, pulsatile tinnitus, pulsing tinnitus sounds, neck or occipital tightness arising from a compensatory tension that tries to increase cerebral spinal fluid. Hyperadrenergic POTS. What about the form of POTS called hyperadrenergic POTS, characterized by too much sympathetic nervous system activity and high levels of norepinephrine in the bloodstream? At first glance, it doesn't fit this low norepinephrine in the vesicles of the locus coeruleus scenario. In fact, it may fit it perfectly. Hyperadrenergic POTS is simply a slightly different compensatory approach to the same problem. Once again, low norepinephrine levels in the vesicles trigger neurons in the locus coeruleus to fire excessively. In hyperadrenergic POTS, the firing is so rapid that the normal reuptake system, which keeps norepinephrine in the nerve synapse, fails, and norepinephrine spills out into the blood, where it's not helpful. Instead of responding precisely, they're firing indiscriminately and ineffectively. They're like panicked machine gunners who spray the bushes every time a twig snaps. Instead of being too strong, the sympathetic nervous system is actually too weak. There's a paradox here, though. If low norepinephrine vesicular content requires a higher signal for activation, why are the neurons firing excessively? They should be inert, and they would be if they weren't wrapped up in a network. When the ever-watchful brain senses more norepinephrine is needed, it puts its foot on the norepinephrine gas pedal, telling those neurons to produce. The neuron's inability to respond to the signals causes the brain to push the norepinephrine gas pedal even more. That causes the neurons to fire continuously. Their flailing about introduces noise into the system that ends up making things worse. The brain interprets the instability and lack of precision present as a threat and calls for even more firing to resolve it. And sensing danger turns the microglia on. The inflammatory cytokines and oxidative stress they produce further strain the long COVID neurons and damage the mitochondria. This high noise, low signal situation could explain why many people are so sensitive to lights, odors, and sounds. The core problem in the brain isn't that it's overstimulated, it's that it's not stable enough. Even here in the central nervous system, in the end, we get back to a very common theme, a lack of power and energy that's shown up in the muscles, the immune system, etc. The nervous system is overreactive because it is underpowered. The brain circuits that filter out and process sensory stimuli simply aren't getting the energy they need to work properly. This reminded me of Bob Navio's report that low energy situations result in tension, not relaxation. Next up, part 2, treatment implications. Support Health Rising and keep the information flowing. At the link in the text version of the article, you can either give one time or give monthly. Thanks for reading.